November 6, 1980, Long Beach, California. Don Utter, interviewed by Kay Bruegel.
Where were you born?
Well, I was born in Texas, but I was smarter than most Texans. I only stayed 2 weeks. I moved to New Mexico for a couple of years and then to Long Beach, and I've lived here most of the time since. I was born in 1919, by the way, if you want to handle on the beginnings.
Under what circumstances was your mother in Texas for a short stay or whatever?
Well, my family lived in a mining camp in New Mexico. And the nearest hospital, good hospital, was the Catholic hospital in El Paso, Texas. And I was born during the flu epidemic that followed World War II. And the doctors thought it would be advisable to get out of that mining camp because I guess there was some flu around there. So I went down to El Paso for a couple of weeks. Don't remember it at all.
What was the name of the mining camp?
Well, this was the Carlisle Mine was where we stayed, and the family lived in Carlisle Castle, which was a big old two-story adobe that had been built by an English mining company back in the 1870s. My grandfather owned the Carlisle Mine, and along with about 10 or 12 other mining properties in the what is called the Steeple Rock Mining District in New Mexico.
Were your grandparents around when you were growing up, or while you lived in New Mexico?
Yes, the grandparents on my father's side. On my mother's side, they lived on a ranch up in the northeastern corner of New Mexico, near a little town called Narivasa, New Mexico, and I barely knew my mother's parents. Matter of fact, I only remember meeting them once when they came to Long Beach, when I was probably 12 years old, something like that.
But your father's family lived in a mining camp?
Yes, and they moved to Long Beach. Actually, earlier than we did, and when we came to Long Beach, my grandfather and grandmother were established here in town.
What did your father and your grandfather do in the mining camp?
Well, they had a gold silver mining operation involving working some established mines. They weren't developing mines which had not been worked. And it was just, the usual, looking for some rich enough ore to take out and then keeping the water pumped out of the shafts and the timber in and the equipment working. It's just routine mining. My dad also was the assayer. He did that and did a lot of the mining engineering, but you did everything, you know, in a small mine. You mucked and drilled a truck and hooked up machinery and fought the electrical failures. You did it all.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had two brothers, but my youngest brother was born after the family moved to Long Beach. He was born here. My oldest brother was born in Silver City, New Mexico. No, I beg your pardon. He was born in Berkeley, California. My parents had been out at Berkeley. My dad was going to the University of California. And my older brother was born while I was in Berkeley.
What kind of education did your father have?
He had 2 years at the normal school in Silver City, and then what they used to call postgraduate high school stuff. He took some classes in at Long Beach Poly High, among other places, and he had about a year and a half at the mining college at Berkeley. He never graduated from Berkeley. He was called back to operate a mine as the acting mining engineer, the operating mining engineer, so he never did graduate from college. Mother had a normal school education, and she had taught school, elementary school, in New Mexico in a couple of small towns. I think she was two or three years in a little place called Belen, Mexico.
I'm kind of confused about the relationship between your family's interest in Long Beach and in New Mexico. Had they been in New Mexico for generations, or?
No, my grandfather came to New Mexico as a young man from Connecticut. And I guess he was originally involved in selling some of the territorial bonds or something. He was a businessman. And then he met his future wife, Sophie Livingston, who was actually from New York State. But they had come out, her parents had come out to Santa Fe, New Mexico for her father's health. And they were in the New Mexico territory then. So he met her in New Mexico, while they were both transplanted Easterners.
And how did they happen to have this connection with Long Beach?
Well, when the mining operations got slow, most of the gold-silver mines were shut during World War I to conserve materials and labor and so forth. We did have one mine that continued to operate, because it also produced copper, lead, and zinc, as well as gold and silver. But then, I guess there was a drop in metal prices after World War I and inflation in terms of cost, and mining operations became unprofitable. So the mines were closed down. My grandfather, however, had made a good deal of money, and he came out to California and involved in various activities, promoting mines, various kinds of investments, little real estate. And he made Long Beach his home and made very, very few trips to New Mexico the rest of his life. I mean, he died in the middle 30s, but he just didn't go back to New Mexico. The mines stayed put. They didn't do anything. And my father and my uncle handled what mining operations went on during those years. There were times during the Depression when labor got cheap, and especially when the price of gold went from $20 an ounce to $34 an ounce, why, the mining operations began to pay, and most of the operations that we were involved in out there during those years actually were just reworking old dumps. They had improved the extraction methods so that mine dumps and mill dumps that had been considered waste in times earlier could now be profitably worked by a cyanide process. And during the Depression years, the smelters were mostly smelting copper ores, and they had a need for silicious flux to handle the copper ores. In the smelting process, you have to have a certain amount of silica in order to form the slag to remove the impurities from the metals that you want to keep. And if you don't have that in your natural ore, you have to add silica. So it paid the smelters to give a good price on the smelting of highly silicious ores. And the particular ore we had ran about 70-80% silica. So it was highly desirable for the smelters, so we got a good price on the smelting. And our ore was mostly smelted in El Paso.
So, do you know why specifically your grandfather chose Long Beach, or?
Well, I think it was probably my grandmother's choice. It was climate and a community that seemed comfortable. They were happy here. They joined the First Congregational Church, and grandmother was a big shot in the DAR, but she had instant rank in the DAR because one of her ancestors had been General John Fellows, who was an aide-de-camp of General Washington during the Revolutionary War. So this gave her a certain amount of status. She wasn't descended from Private Jones, you see, something like that.
But you were kind of back and forth between Long Beach and...
No. No, I basically was 2 years old, 2.5 years old when I moved to Long Beach, and I stayed in this area. I didn't go back and forth.
My father and my uncle did,
yes. So I'm almost a Long Beach boy.
Where did your grandparents and your parents and perhaps your uncle even live in Long Beach when they came?
Well, my grandparents lived at 1834 East 2nd in a big house, big two-story shingle covered house. The house was torn down many years ago to build an apartment house. They were very large, desirable lots there near the park, so those old houses after the Depression, they were removed as this one was. And I lived most of my growing years at a little house that we still own at 636 Obispo.
So most of your life is involved with Long Beach. Do you remember anything about being in New Mexico, or is that kind of...
No, I didn't remember New Mexico at all. I have been back in recent years, but I mean, I don't remember from my childhood.
What do you remember about growing up in Long Beach?
Well, I remember, of course, the open space that used to be around the city, considering the differences. I also remember the beautiful surf that we used to have in Long Beach. I enjoyed swimming, and when I was junior high and high school age, I was very much into riding the breakers, which later became surfing. And Long Beach, before the construction of the breakwater, was perhaps the best body surfing beach in the United States, including Hawaii. You had to go to Australia to get a better surf for body surfing than the Long Beach surf.
How come?
The nature of the surf depends on the curve of the beach in part, and also the slope of the bottom, the presence of offshore bars. And waves which are good for body surfing have a little different shape than waves which are very good for board surfing. They have to be a stronger wave because you don't, there's more drag on the surfer being pushed through the water when he's body surfing. So we had a surf in Long Beach where the waves would break out into rollers, and then the rollers would come in a long distance, 50 yards or so, and you could ride in front of those rollers, body surfing. You can do it on board as well. It's very easy on a board, but it, the kinds of swells that will propel a surfboard won't drag a body surfer along. So we had a body surfing beach. They have several in Australia which are like that. They're kind of treacherous when the surf is large for people who are not pretty good swimmers. As a consequence, you had the water to yourself if you were a swimmer when the water was rough. But I had the fun of riding waves as large as 15 feet. I remember catching some alongside Belmont Pier during an October storm when the waves were actually the top of the crest of the swells were coming right up to the level of the pier, the deck of the pier. Those were big waves. And actually, the way they broke, they'd break over at the top and then roll down, and you could actually ride those things without being a super swimmer. Sometimes the big surf would break all in one crash. We call these things bone crushes. And there were a few dozen really rugged guys who could ride these things, but most of us who considered ourselves rather good surfers would avoid these kinds of waves. I mean, you wouldn't even go out in the surf when this was all you had, or if the waves had some variety and you were out at the surf line, you would pick your waves and you would avoid the bone crushers because They would drag you in about halfway into the whitewater zone in the surf, jump you, pound you on the bottom, and then leave you stranded in an area where you had to struggle like mad to either get out through the surf or get in. You know, you wonder whether you're going to drown or not. It's kind of scary at times. But the surf in Long Beach was absolutely gorgeous. The beach was beautiful in those days, too. That was before we had as much flood control work as was later done. So we still had some sand replenishment on the beach. And the natural sand beaches of Long Beach were vastly superior to the beaches that we have now because we had a coarser sand, which was clean. It wasn't full of silt. If you sat on the sand with a wet bathing suit, you could just brush yourself off. The material was brushed off. It didn't leave you muddy. Not only that, the silt didn't... You didn't have the blowing silt that you have on windy portions of the beach now, which makes the beach almost unusable at times behind you.
I don't understand about the flood control work and how it's changing. Could you explain that?
The sand on our beaches is not generated by the grinding action of the surf, but rather that sand comes down the rivers. The principal source of sand for the beaches of Long Beach was the Los Angeles River. In order to control flooding on the Los Angeles River, dams were placed upstream. The floodplains were restricted by building up levees, and in later years, many sections of the Los Angeles River were concrete lined. In other words, the idea was to get rid of floodwaters in a big hurry. However, we've always had water shortages in Southern California, and efforts were made to catch as much of the water upstream as possible in the San Fernando Valley, in San Gabriel Canyon. A series of dams were built. There's a whole series of dams across the San Gabriel Mountains, actually, and mostly in the San Gabriel Mountains, to catch those runoff waters. But the net result was that the river simply didn't carry sand anymore, so that as the flood control developments began to have their effect, the sand beaches of Long Beach were eroded away. And I can remember back in the 30s when there was no sand beach at Cherry Avenue. You'd go down at the foot of Cherry Avenue and you'd step off that concrete bulkhead onto clay beds, and there was no sand at all. And at high tide, the water came right up to the bluff, about the toe of the bluff. And in Belmont Shore, where I live now, at the foot of my street, Laverne Avenue, the houses were washed away that had been built south of Ocean Avenue. And when you had a storm surf with on top of a high tide, the water would come right across Ocean Boulevard, seawater. So there was very, very little beach here. Down along the peninsula, many sections of the beach were completely eroded away along the boardwalk, so that you had just a bulkhead at the median tide. You'd have the water right against the bulkhead, and you'd only see the sand down there at a very low tide, so that the beach there was completely eroded away.
So where did the sand we have now come from?
The sand we have now is dredged mostly from Long Beach Harbor and from dredging operations in Alameda Bay to deepen the bay, and also to expand the bay for the construction of the marina. That's where most of it has come from. Now we're getting some sand pumped out of the San Gabriel River and the Los Angeles River as those lower river courses are deepened to increase the flow of flood water. But all of this stuff is silt-laden. It's more mud than sand. So we're not putting a very good material on the beaches now.
Okay, I guess we should get back to your childhood and... You probably didn't notice this when you were growing up. You went to started school in Long Beach?
Yes, I went to Horace Mann Elementary School, Jefferson Junior High, Wilson High School, and Long Beach City College. In those days, Long Beach Junior College. So I had all my education here. It's worth mentioning that in the good old days, before the Depression, we had extremely progressive schools in Long Beach, outstanding schools. And the elementary school I went to, Horace Mann, had a compartmentalized program with special art, music, woodshop, gardening, nature study, visiting band teachers, and you name it. A full program, as rich a program as they have in the better junior highs in the area now.
What do you mean by departmentalized?
After the primary grades, in the upper elementary grades, every student went from room to room in what in those years was called a platoon system. And you would go to a core program class, which was English and Social Studies, every day. And every day you would have an arithmetic class in the math room with a specialized math teacher. We also had penmanship. I think we had that every other day. It wasn't every day. But we had an art room, a vocal music room, an instrumental room, music room, wood shop, which was called Sloyd for the boys, and a sewing room for the girls. And a garden that everybody could take. Nature study had a bungalow outside the main buildings with a considerable ground area around it. It was next to the school garden. And it, in some ways, in terms of plant and animal collections, it was superior to any junior high I ever saw in Long Beach at any stage. And I taught science in Long Beach until my retirement, and so I know what the current scene is. But this was better than junior high school students now have today, and there are no science rooms in any elementary school in Long Beach today. We have gone downhill in elementary education. The facilities at the junior and senior highs were very good, too, for the times then. But of course, the earthquake of 1933 changed things because there was so much destruction of buildings. And when the buildings were rebuilt, in many cases, a lot of things were left out. For instance, Jefferson Junior High, where I was a student when the earthquake struck, had a tin shop, a wood shop, a general shop, which included auto shop, a print shop, and an electric shop, with specialized teachers, Smith Uzak teachers, who were people who were German in the trades that they taught, highly competent people, excellent equipment, lots of space, plenty of materials to work with, even during the Depression years, a really outstanding shop and vocational arts program. Well, after the buildings were rebuilt, most of the shops were eliminated, and all I had was a wood shop and a metal shop, period. And the other specialized shops were gone. They did away with print shop, they did away with electric shop, they did away with tin shop.
What is Smith
Hughes Act? The Smith Hughes Act was a piece of federal legislation which was designed to encourage vocational education, and it provided for the credentialing of teachers who were skilled craftsmen and also had a certain amount of formal training in education. So these people essentially had journeyman status and 5 years' experience in a trade, then 2 years of college, and they had a special credential, Smith-Hughes credential, which allowed them only to teach in their fields of expertise. They couldn't teach English or math or PE, although in some districts they did. But the idea was to utilize skilled craftsmen as teachers and made a provision to do this in terms of the licensing. Also, to encourage this, the federal government provided funds, and I don't know quite how that funding worked, but school districts were always delighted to get Smith-Hughes teachers and Smith-Hughes assistants on the construction of shops because it meant some increase in the funding of the educational program.
You mentioned that your grandmother was active in this Congregational Church and the VAR, I think. What about your mother? What kind of things did she do?
Mother was not particularly interested in some of those social activities. She was more political in her orientation. She had come from a co-op family in England. Mother was born in England and came to the United States when she was about 15. But her father had been the storekeeper for a co-op in Yorkshire, in England, and they were old single taxers, and they had some, for their time and place, some somewhat radical leanings. And Mother was always political. Over the years, for instance, she was usually a registered Democrat. When my dad was a Republican, he hung to the... He thought that Herbert Hoover was one of the great presidents alongside Washington and Lincoln. Inveterate Republican. But at any rate, Mother's activities involved... PTA, she held all kinds of PTA jobs over the years. She belonged to a women's discussion group in Long Beach that was one of the intellectual features of the 20s. I think this thing was called the Friday Morning Club. And I can't remember all of the groups she belonged to. She taught Sunday school and ran the cradle roll at the Eastside Christian Church for 15 years or more. And she worked much of the time. She worked for the social welfare department at one stage. She worked for the Los Angeles County Registrar of Voters for many years. And then the last job she had, for 10 or 15 years, she worked for the L.A. County Assessor's Office, mostly in the Long Beach office.
Was she involved in political activities in Long Beach?
She was interested. She wasn't a real political activist in terms of walking precincts and this sort of thing, but she knew a number of the politicians. She was a close friend of Clyde Doyle, who was a congressman from this district. She was a good friend of John G. Clark, who went to the state assembly and then later became a judge in California. There was another fellow from Long Beach who became an appellate court judge whose name escapes me at the moment, but she was acquainted with. But she was the one with the political connections. My dad was largely apolitical. I mean, he was a loyal Republican, but he never had much to say about it outside of the House, or he didn't wear any buttons, or he didn't do any campaigning or anything.
What did your mother do with the social welfare league?
No, she worked for the social welfare department. She was a clerk, just an office clerk running a paper. She never taught after she came to California. She had a variety of clerical jobs, but she never taught again.
And what did your father do?
Dad worked at all kinds of jobs. He worked in oil refineries. He worked in construction, mostly in connection with survey work. He worked for a number of years on a survey crew for the city of Long Beach. And the last job he had, and I think the one that he liked the best, he worked as an engraver for North American Aviation, where you run an engraving machine to make signs and so forth and various. And he worked in the experimental division of North American, because in the experimental division everything was kind of handmade, and so all of the instrument panels and everything was just handmade. And he enjoyed that work. He was a detail person, good at meticulous detail, and he loved North America, and he thought the place was populated by angels.
How did you spend with his education
and
his background in writing then?
Well, during most of the years of his adulthood, there were no jobs for mining engineers. If you took a job as a mining engineer, you had to go to the boondocks. Many people he knew in the mining business who chose to work at it went overseas for many years, and they often worked in rather miserable places, and mining engineers, like geologists, in those years tended to be rather underpaid. It was a rather poorly paid occupation. It was like forest rangers. There were certain outdoor masculine types who liked this kind of work, and there always seemed to be more competent people than there were decent jobs, and so that the job bidding was such as to produce low pay and tough conditions. But he worked at mechanical work mostly, and he was executor of my grandfather's estate, which was an extremely complicated estate with properties in New Mexico and California, a lot of mining properties, a lot of heirs, and actually the management of that estate, he must have spent in excess of 5 years full time on that. And he had a lot of properties to manage, and he did everything from patching roofs on buildings to preparing mining reports, engineering reports.
Did your grandfather have mining properties in California?
He had some mining properties for short periods of time. He was mostly just, they were just speculations. They were things that he bought and sold. He never operated a mine in California. And I don't even have records of where these properties were. I just have some vague awareness of the fact that he had some claims up in the Motherlode country, and I believe a few claims in the Randsburg silver mining district. The big mines were in New Mexico. These are mines with 300, 600 foot shafts, big workings, road networks, and at times there had been mining camps with housing 100 people, you know. I mean, there were major operations. They were big deals.
Well, you must have done something else besides body surf when you were growing up. Did your home have books and things like that in it to suggest that going to school was serious business?
Oh, yes. Education was always very important in our house, and we had plenty of books. We had, of course, good libraries in Long Beach, and we were encouraged to use these. School was important, and as I say, my mother was always involved in PTA and was in touch with the school, and all of the three boys were good students. We had success in school and were happy in school. We didn't ever have any troubles in school. And if schoolwork is relatively easy for you, why, somehow or other, you don't have too many problems. But we, you know, engaged in all of the kinds of things that boys do. We had a big yard with a basketball court in the backyard. We had, we went fishing, and as we got old enough to have cars, we had various old clunker cars, and we were always working on them in the yard. Dad encouraged us to do that. He thought that it was valuable to have some mechanical skills, and you have to get your hands in grease to know what the motor's all about. And so we were always encouraged to do that. And then, of course, during the Depression years, when times were tough, there was a time when my dad was on the WPA, and things were kind of grim. So my older brother and I had jobs over the years, everything from selling vegetables door to door off of a wagon. A kid could get a job then when a man couldn't. I swept and scrubbed and mopped the old Wagner drugstore for, I guess, about 10 years. I did that job on every Sunday morning. I used to clean up Chet's barbershop at 7th and Redondo. We did yard work. I would guess that for one considerable period, my older brother, who always had a paper route, by the way, I never went for paper routes. Oh, we delivered shopping news. We delivered handbills for theaters, and for which we got passes. I didn't pay to go to a movie for years. I had all passes I wanted to the old Ritz Theater on Redondo and 7th, and the Lee Theater, which is now the Art Theater at 4th and Cherry. But we were busy. I don't know. We didn't do anything terribly important, but we had lots of activity going on, and lots of little jobs. We were, you know, always available for a little small job of cleaning somebody's yard or something like that. And we were an important supplement to the family income.
It sounds like your life primarily revolved around the east side of Long Beach.
Yes, that's correct. But Long Beach was a smaller town, and we got around. You know, we got downtown a good deal. The nickel bus fare, if you wanted to ride the bus or you ride your bike downtown, traffic was modest. It was easy to get around. I had cousins that lived in North Long Beach. We used to go out along the LA River out there. There were large areas that were kind of floodplains. It was full of willows and cottonwoods. And we'd go out there and hunt birds and rabbits and just, you know, rusticate. And you could do this right on the edges of Long Beach. The area near Cal State Long Beach, the lowlands just to the east, there was a big swamp on the Bixby Ranch. And I used to hunt ducks out there when I was a high school student. And where the Bureau of Water and Power, Haynes Power Plant is, with another big swamp. And I'm not sure whether this was Bixby land or whether this was part of the Hoffman Ranch, but at any rate, this was another area where the ranchers would let kids come in. If you hunted with a shotgun, you were welcome, because they had cattle running on this area. And people with shotguns didn't seem to shoot up the cows, whereas these ding-a-lings with their rifles had a bad habit of not finding anything else to shoot at, so they'd shoot at the cows. They didn't kill them, but it was a $20 vet bill to dig a festering slug out of the side of these doggone cows, and they got pretty unhappy. But they got to know you after a while, and if, you know, you're one of the guys that, didn't tear anything up, you didn't break down the fences or anything, why, they were much more tolerant of children in those years. I mean, they, when I was a kid growing up, you had certain privileges as a child to do kind of crazy things, and property owners expected you to steal their fruit or watermelons. I mean, that's what kids do. It wasn't considered anything terribly bad. Once in a while, you'd find a mean one who'd fire some rock salt out of his shotgun at you, but that was pretty rare. Most people were very, very tolerant of kids. I mean, you could trespass on their property. Many areas in Long Beach, they didn't have backyard fences. The six-foot fence was not stylish then. If they had a fence, it was a little low picket fence. And you go through backyards just like you go down the sidewalks. And people didn't think anything of it. You knew where the bad dogs were. You avoided those places. And you knew where the old crabs were, and you avoided them. But, I mean, most of the time, if you wanted to get on the next street and you didn't want to go around a block to get there, you just cut through the yard and jump over the fence. Well, that's the way kids traveled, and it was accepted. There was a great deal more tolerance, a great deal more freedom for kids to move around than there is now. And I don't know how it was for the girls. I suspect they were a bit more restricted, but at least the boys didn't go anyplace. It was accepted. Same way about industrial plants. We used to walk into factory operations. There used to be an old Darnell Machine Works down near Anaheim and Newport Avenue. They made casters and various small metal machining things. And you could go in there and watch the guys work. And they'd say, oh, watch out, kid, don't get near that machine or something, and you could go. And I used to, and I went through Ford assembly plants in Long Beach. I went through both power plants. I've been through foundries. And frequently, these were not regular tours, but my dad thought that we should have these experiences. So he just put the kids in the car, and we'd go out to visit a plant or a factory or a shop or something, and he'd just walk up the front office and say, my boys would like to see how you're doing this operation. And they'd say, sure. And some foreman would grab us and we'd walk through. Well, nowadays everybody is so frightened of lawsuits that you wouldn't think of doing that. But times were freer then, that's for sure.
Were you aware of the Pike?
Oh, yeah. The Pike was a place that we went with some frequency, especially when we had visitors from out of town, because they always had to go to the Pike. But the Pike was quite a going amusement center. It was always considered a little tough, and it was a favorite hangout for the sailors of the Pacific Fleet. And the young ladies who provided them solace when they were ashore. But in the earlier years of my recollection, the Pike was a very respectable place in terms of, you know, it wasn't just kids and kooks, but everybody went to the Pike. It was the thing to do. They had band concerts. There were probably, oh, several dozen rides. I mean, lots of different kinds of rides and all kinds of curio shops, and including some excellent Oriental art shops. Nothing comparable is in Long Beach today. In 1980, I mean, they had much better Oriental art for sale, and of course, in those years, the prices were very modest, too. Also, of course, at the Pike, they had the big roller coasters. Some of the bigger ones in the country were located. The Jackrabbit Racer was the earliest one I remember, and then the Cyclone Racer. And these were very popular activities.
being on the east side, were you sort of isolated from the influence of the Navy, or